My name is Robert Gostan. I'm interviewing Mr. Leo Calogiorgi at the Old China Hands reunion in Portland, Oregon. The interview is taking place on September the 12th, 2006. Welcome. If you would please introduce yourself now.
Well, thank you. Will I call you Robert or?
Bob or Robert.
Bob,
yeah.
Okay. As you mentioned, my name is Leo Calogiorgi.
Could you spell the last name, too?
It's K-A-L-A-G-E-O-R-G-I.
Thanks, yeah.
Actually, it's Leo P. Calogiorgi, and the P stands for Plato.
Oh.
That's my father's name. I'm from a Russian background, so the name is known as Lev Platonovich.
Lev Platonovich, yeah.
Calogiorgi in Russian.
Yeah.
So I was born in Harbin. September 9th, 1935.
We're almost exactly the same age.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
So I came down to Shanghai as a youngster of 4 years old. I arrived in Shanghai roughly late 39, early 40, with my mother. My parents were divorced in Harbin when I was three. So I came down to Shanghai through Tianjin by train about 1940.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we could stop for a second.
Sure.
And I'll ask you a few questions about your father and who he was, what part of Russia he came from, and so on. And did you retain any contact with him after your mother and he got divorced? Or?
Well, actually, we didn't maintain any contact with my father. My father's name was Tsin, T-S-I-N. It's a Chinese name. He was part Chinese, actually Manchurian. But we have very strong ties from my mother's side because I took my mother's name, Calogiorgi.
I see.
And it's a very well-known family, actually, in Russia. It's a noble family. And recently, fairly recently, I found out a lot of history about it.
Yeah.
Because there's a direct line all the way to Catherine the Great.
Uh-huh.
And if anybody interested, I can dwell on that later on. But
It
was interesting to us to find that out. I have a whole family tree that was discovered during my the time that I was on assignment in Russia. Actually, my wife and I and our youngest daughter spent 8 years in Russia not too long ago, and we came back in 1999.
Oh, okay. Well, that's we'll get to that later,
yeah.
Then. That's really interesting.
But
what part of Russia do the Calogiorgis come from, then?
Well, my grandfather was born in a place called Belstok, which I was trying to find a map, and couldn't find it in Russia. Actually, it was in Poland.
Yeah.
But at that time, it was part of Russia.
Right.
And he spent most of his time in St. Petersburg because he was graduated from the School of Cadets in St. Petersburg at Suvorov Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And he, as a young officer, served at the Summer Palace in St. Petersburg, or near St. Petersburg. And it's called Pushkino now. And so we've got a lot of photographs and old documents pertaining to that time.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, that's
and
great.
Then,
very interesting.
He, when he left the military, he was reassigned to Harbin, which was a main hub there for the Trans-Siberian Railroad.
Yeah.
And so that's why I was born in Harbin.
Mm-hmm.
My mother was born in Ekaterinburg. She was born in Novonikolaevsk. It's a small town on the way to Ekaterinburg. And my father was born in Irkutsk.
In Irkutsk, yeah.
In Irkutsk, yeah. So right, he also ended up in Harbin during the evacuation.
I see. Are you an only child?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And So your father and mother split up while still in Harbin.
That's
and now you've come down to Shanghai with
That's
your
correct.
Mother. And pick up the story there. So how did you live and where did you
okay,
live?
Okay, I went to school in St. Joan of Arc.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I first started with maybe spent about a month in a school called Le Col Remy.
Yes, I've heard of it.
Yeah, which for whatever reason, I wasn't there for too long. And then my mother put me in the St. Joan of Arc College, where I spent quite a bit of time. That's
But you came to Shanghai at the age of four, did you say?
I was about four, going on five. Yeah,
so you didn't go to school immediately, but...
Well, it was pretty quick.
Pretty quick,
because I was the youngest in my class.
Really, yeah.
And so I started school maybe younger than most people
the
did.
The average, yeah.
Yes, and... My mother worked, I guess she worked, she got attached to the Russian Ballet, and she performed in the Lyceum Theater with a group there, the ballet group. I forgot the ballet mistress' name. It's, there was some pretty famous, in the opera group, the most famous one was Catherine Orlova, who was the head.
Uh-huh. Did you give me your mother's full name?
My mother's name was Ekaterina Nikolaevna Kalagyorgi. So actually Catherine.
Yeah.
And so she worked in the ballet and the opera and then
There is, we have in the collection a huge volume called Ruski v Shanghai.
Yeah.
Would she appear in there? Very likely then.
She wasn't that well known, so but it's possible. I'll be very curious to see those archives myself because I know that there's very little history really of Russians and Chinese.
Much less than
much
of others.
Less than of the others. Yeah.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah,
so
we have some. Yeah.
And she worked also in DD's and as a waitress, and. Let's see, there was another place, the Renaissance. Yeah, the Renaissance Cafe as a waitress,
mm-hmm.
and also behind a counter. I think they had a little, like a restaurant there.
Yeah.
So basically, we lived rather modestly, and we lived on Route Grouchy, number 41 Route Grouchy.
How do you spell that?
That's actually, some people pronounce it Grouchy. Grouchy.
Oh, yes, okay.
It's in a French concession.
Right.
It's actually, the test should know because it's very close to Rue du Maire.
Yeah.
And that's where St. Joan of Arc was.
Mm-hmm.
St. Joan was just at the corner. It has since been demolished, I understand.
Oh, yeah. So, would you like to talk about your school days or what you did growing up?
Yeah. In fact, I brought here a picture that you can... might be of some interest. There's two pictures here. One is of the school. This is of the school. And this is one of my classes. And some of the kids in that class are presently here in this meeting.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of them are here, and they're upstairs there. They came to the reunion.
There's a I mean, this is interesting to me.
Yeah,
both from the standpoint of your presence. Where are you? Are you in this?
Well, it's my name is there. See,
I
would be in the back row usually.
Oh yeah,
because
I see him.
Tall.
You are right next to a guy called George Seaglove.
Yeah, right.
My best friend in Shanghai was Victor Seaglov.
Oh.
Can't be this, it must be related, they even look alike.
Well, it could be either his son or his brother. Well, by age, I think he would be his brother.
Yeah, don't remember if he had any say. I'm going to talk to Victor. He lives
in... Yeah, where is George?
Victor Seaglov lives in Sydney, Australia.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and he's the spitting image of this kid, so...
Okay. Well, maybe that could be Victor.
It could be Victor,
we forget,
yeah,
maybe it's not George, maybe it's Victor.
But I wasn't aware that he had gone to Saint-Jean d'Arc, but he could have, yeah.
Well,
I'll look into that,
well, yeah.
These are lovely pictures,
and
if you can
then
get...
And it took them a while to identify the names. Mm-hmm. So I've still got some question marks, which I would like to identify.
Any chance you can send me a copy
yours,
of these?
You can keep it.
Oh, those are great. Okay, we'll archive them. Great.
Later on, if you leave me an email, I can send you more stuff.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So,
I'll give you my cards. And
yeah.
All right, so, but, you know, the listening audience can't see the picture,
yeah,
so we better move on.
Anyway, so I went to Saint-Jean d'Arc. Actually, when I started Saint-Jean d'Arc, I didn't speak a word of English. So it's kind of interesting, but I have very high regards for the Marius brothers because they did a wonderful job.
Your first language is Russian, then?
That's correct.
Yeah, okay.
So we started out, and as I said, I was about four, just going on five.
Mm-hmm.
And remember our first class, we'd sing the alphabet, you know, A, B, C, D, so
mm-hmm.
forth. And... they were very good, and the thing is, really was great, was a very mixed class. So from an early age, there was no racial discrimination or religious discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
We had all kind of kids there.
Yeah.
Predominantly Western kids, sort of Occidental,
yeah.
But there was a sprinkling of Chinese,
really?
A sprinkling of mixed. And although it was a Catholic school, it wasn't necessarily all Catholic kids. I wasn't Catholic. And there were a couple of Jewish kids with us. And the nice thing about the school, although it was fairly heavy on religion in the sense of we learned catechism and the gospels, they didn't force us. They didn't insist we did it.
Oh, really?
They didn't insist we go to chapel only on certain occasions. And if you had you want to refuse, you can refuse. But the education was great, and
did your mother raise you in any faith particularly?
Well, I'm Orthodox.
You're Orthodox, yeah.
I was baptized. In fact, they show the church in one of the slides. I think it had also been since demolished in Harbin, St. Sophie's Cathedral, and that's where I was baptized. And then when I was in Shanghai, I used to go attend services. Not very regular, because the Orthodox don't insist you go every Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
In that big cathedral that's on, I think it still exists, on route, I forget the names of the streets. It was not far from the school, it was just
mm-hmm.
behind Umair.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Paul Henri or something like that.
So how many years did you attend Jean d'Arc?
Jean d'Arc, I attended for... 5 years, let's see, no more, 8 years.
Uh-huh.
8 years in Jean d'Arc. That is, they had like a standard 1 through 5, and then you had 3 forms, so that's 8 years. And after that, you automatically go over to St. Francis Xavier's
uh-huh.
for the last 2 years,
uh-huh.
Class 1 and Class 2. And we didn't quite finish the last year because the communists came in and they shut the school down. Didn't shut it on right away.
Uh-huh.
But I left Shanghai pretty late. I left Shanghai late in 53.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I graduated from St. Francis Xavier's in 51.
Mm-hmm.
They cut the year by half. It really should have been 52.
Oh, I see.
But they
issued you a diploma.
They accelerated and then,
I see. What about sort of daily life? I mean, what did you eat? Who did you have contact with? Did you have much contact with the local population? And,
well, we actually had I was fortunate enough to be there long enough to kind of mix with a lot of different crowds. Originally, of course, we just hang around the Jean d'Arc crowd, kids that I knew from school. And then kids that lived in our general area. And I was a member of the YMCA, which
wow.
I really enjoyed, and then I was a member of the race course. Actually, not that I wasn't a member there, but we could use the race course.
And then they issue some sort of identity card or something so you could get in there,
yeah,
I think.
Right.
Yeah,
right. And then later on, as things got a little tougher, I was also a member of the rowing club for a little while.
Oh, that's interesting.
Until they closed down. And I worked there as a lifeguard in the rowing club. My training, swimming training in the YMCA.
About what years would you have been in the rowing club?
Rowing club, I was, again, in the later years, I would guess it was for about 49 to 50 or 50 to 51, thereabouts.
Okay.
Because they closed it finally. Yeah. And then I got a job, job's very hard then, just as I finished school. So I got a job in the French club as a swimming instructor and a lifeguard at the big French club, not the Cercle Sportif, but the main one that was, I forget all the streets.
The big not one. The one across from the Cathay Mansion.
That's the one. The
oh, that is the yeah, one. Yeah, the that's one. The big one. Yeah.
And then, we had our different groups. Very often we had parties in different homes. And started out when I was just a kid, was more birthday parties. And then we moved to sort of like dance parties and we'd get together. And as the group got smaller, because more and more people were leaving China, a lot of farewell parties.
Yeah.
And then you kind of start mixing. I also joined the Russian club, or that time it was called the Soviet club. And they finally kicked me out from there for not attending the political lectures, which were mandatory.
Found
out there's a bunch of us were skipping the lectures, and I was accused of being the instigator, and not the progressive element.
Wow.
So, but that didn't bother me at all, so. Then I was part of the Boy Scouts.
Oh, yeah.
Which I also got kicked out for not following orders. But
I see you.
I was not a very obedient child.
Yeah.
But we had fun, and most of the fun was kind of harmless. So we didn't do any,
I'd like to go a little deeper into your connection with the Russian community in general.
Yeah.
So while you were going to Jeanne d'Arc, now they taught in English, didn't they?
Well, in two languages, actually, because Jeanne d'Arc was split. Yeah. Half of Jeanne d'Arc, he had identical classes in French and in English.
Mm-hmm.
And then the French was limited until, I think, the fourth standard or something, or fifth standard.
Uh-huh.
And then everybody moved to the English side. And I started the English side and went all the way through. We just sort of regret, because the kids that went to the French side, they learned French and then they learned English.
Yeah.
We had 1 hour of French a day, and we didn't pay too much attention, so my French isn't the best.
Uh-huh.
I did learn some French, but not as like to.
Did you maintain your Russian as well?
You spoke Russian
at home.
But I couldn't read or write in Russian until I was like about 16 years old. Then I got embarrassed myself that I couldn't read in Russian, because somebody said, "What do you mean you can't read Russian?" So I forced myself. I got... picked the biggest book I could think of, which was War and Peace by Tolstoy in the original Russian, and I forced myself to read that with a dictionary.
Oh.
And that helped me, and helped me a lot in later years when I got assigned to my GM to Russia. And that also improved my Russian further.
Yeah.
But basically in Shanghai, I used more English than I would use Russian, because
It was the first language.
Well, because of the
business,
YMCA and because of the school, and we had different activities. We'd go on picnics, take our bicycles, and go to Hangzhou and areas.
But the Russian community was big, and
it was,
and they had their own clubs, as I understand it, and various societies and so on.
Yeah,
you were still a young boy, but were you involved in any Russian youth groups?
Not really, except my time there with the Soviet club for a while, and then I got kicked out of there. But for about a year or so, we would go there, and I think it was at that time, that was the years of the communist time, because they shut down the YMCA, so I didn't have, where to go, and so they said, when
so
you
they allowed
here.
The Soviet club to function. And meanwhile, and at home, you basically your home life consisted of you and your mother.
That's correct. Yeah.
And what sort of food did you eat? Russian food, or
my mother was a very good cook, and she made sure I ate all the good things. And occasionally, when she had to work, they had, you know, interesting service that I still remember walking down as a kid. They had these like kind of round tin cans, and there was a holder that you would slide a bunch of them together.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you put the hottest one below so the heat keeps the other right. ones. And so she sent me this ready-made lunch. There was, you know, the main entree, and the soup, and there was
everything. Yeah.
Cabbage, and there's some fruit and stuff. And then, of course, you know, in Shanghai, you don't go hungry. You had all those mouth waters when I remember them. There's the little dumplings and... stuff they sell on the street, so there was all kind of stuff around. But at home, I ate primarily, I would say, Russian type of food, like, you know, borscht and cutlets and pelmeni and stuff like that.
Yeah, I see. Good. And your mother had friends as well.
Oh, yes, of course.
And were they mostly fellow Russian expatriates?
Well, most of friends were from, you know, artistic friends. They were either from the opera or from the... They always had music in the house. We always had, you know, kind of artistic type of people in the house. There was no lack of babysitters. And every time my mother had to work or something, somebody was there. And it was very kind of warm type of growing up.
Very nice, yeah.
And for vacations, we would go down to Chapu. That was kind of an experience also in itself. I don't know if you...
What was that?
Chapu was on the sea. It took us on the river. No, I think it was on the sea. It took us some very enterprising Jewish fellow that was living in our lane. He had a transport company. And so he picked up some old 6x6s, those big U.S. Army trucks.
This would have been after the war then.
Right after the war.
Yeah.
And I was only 10 when the war ended.
Right.
10, 11. So they'd pack us all into this truck in the back with all the kind of, I remember, cans and supplies and things. And it would be like a four-hour trip on that truck bouncing up and down till we go to this place, Chapu, which was, I think a lot of people should know that because there's a lot of people out there. And you rent these little huts, fishermen huts, I guess. So it was not even a hut, it was kind of just a roof.
Mm-hmm.
And we bring all our stuff and you'll spend a week or two down there and swim and...
There's a beach.
The beach, you can call it the beach. It was actually all mud and a lot of, you know, shells and stuff. You had to wear shoes. It had some sand. And then there was, I think, a Jesuit small monastery there that also the kids from St. Michael's College would go there. So we would kind of mess around with them a little bit. And then occasionally we'd go to a place called, I think it was Ikawei, where they had also a Jesuit monastery or something. That would be a school activity. They'd take us down there and also in a big truck, and all the kids would be singing all the way with one of the priests or the fathers being the chorus guide.
Now, your national identity at the time was what? Did you have
Russian,
any?
Yeah, I was stateless.
But did you have any passports?
No, we were considered stateless.
Russian stateless,
That's why we were stuck there for... we didn't... see, a lot of the Russians ended up in... what do you call that place?
Tubabao. Yeah.
And then they went to the States.
Right.
Well, we didn't go to Tubabao, and we didn't go to... And then another bunch went to Russia.
That's right,
And, but we stayed until we were trying to get to Brazil. First, we were trying to get to, my mother married later on with a Jewish fellow. His name was Harry Wilhoit.
Spell that, please.
W-I-H-O-I-T. W-I-L-H-O-I-T.
Okay.
And Harry had, I think he was manager of MGM theater there or something, or engine
distribution. About when would this have taken
place?
That
was close to the end there, I'd say in early 50s, 51 or so. And then he got transferred to Bangkok. And at that time, we were ready to get a visa to Bangkok. But Bangkok, because of, you know, Russian background, was suspicious that time. They were worried about communists and stuff.
Oh, I see.
And so, we came down to Hong Kong. We spent about a year in Hong Kong. And then this thing didn't pan out going to Bangkok, so we ended up getting a visa going to Brazil. And then Harry also left his, quit his job in Bangkok and went to Brazil also. So we all ended up in Brazil in about 54, thereabouts, yeah.
And where in Brazil?
Then I was in Brazil for about 6 years, and then I ended up in the States.
I see. Where did you live in Brazil?
In both São Paulo and Rio de Janeiro.
Oh, I see. Yeah. And you picked up Portuguese?
Yes.
Okay, well, that's good. Let's see, before we go to Brazil, though, back in China, during the war, did you have any particular war experiences, or did you?
Yeah, we used to love, as kids, we'd enjoy climbing up on the roof there and watch the B-29s bomb the heck out of, we yelled at by our parents because it was kind of dangerous, not
sure.
So much from the planes, but from the shrapnel, from the
anti-aircraft, yeah.
In fact, we had a few hit our yard there, and there were big scramble among the kids of who's going to get the shrapnel.
Yeah.
And outside of that, the Japanese didn't bother us too much. You know, we didn't bother them; they didn't bother us. When we were going to across the guard gate bridge, there was a sentry there, a guard there, and he was very strict, but they were stricter with the Chinese. They kind of ignored us as long as we didn't mess with them.
I'm just watching the tape.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So there was nothing really significant. I mean, you see Japanese. One time, a piece of a Japanese plane fell into, I think it was a gas tank or something, fell into one of the apartments across from us.
Mm.
And we were kind of impressed that a Japanese pilot, who to us looked like just a kid, came there personally to apologize to the people there that this
okay.
thing fell there and hit that house. Nobody was hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And outside of that, there was very little contact with us.
I see. Well, again, anything else? I want to talk about what happened later in your life, but anything else about China that kind of comes to mind that we ought to throw in here? Any particular events or experiences or funny things that might have happened?
The flood that we had, I forgot what year that was. There was a typhoon, and as you know, Shanghai got hit by typhoons a few times.
Yeah.
One was particularly nasty because we had, I remember wading through water practically waist deep. We thought it was fun. You know, kids think everything
That's
is
right,
fun.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, well, I remember that myself, wading around in rubber boots.
The communist occupation was added, and also.
Well, yeah. I mean, we should talk about that. What happened when they came in, and
Well, that was kind of also pretty ridiculous because before that, there was there was excitement there because they were building these pill boxes and sandbags all over the place and all the intersections and. All this talk about the Kuomintang, they were going to defend Shanghai to the last man. This was going to be the Stalingrad of the blah, blah, and all that stuff. So everybody was all like, kind of a little apprehensive, wondering. And I got up one morning, this friend of mine came there. He was yelling at me. He said, come on out. Let's go take a look. I said, look at what? He says, it's all over. I says, what do you mean it's all over? He says, everyone you're going to see out there in the street, every soldier, it's a communist soldier. I says, come on, and nothing happened. I heard a couple of shots at night, you know, but we never paid too much attention to that in those days. And it came out, and yeah, they all looked the same, and sort of, until I looked closer and you see some red stars.
Yeah.
I says, yeah. But they're very, very polite, very, they were extremely disciplined.
Mm.
And I don't know what he bothered anybody. He drove around a little bit on our bikes and looked at things, and the streets were kind of deserted. But they came in because the Kuomintang just melted away. They just dropped their weapons and their uniforms and just took off.
Mm,
so it was a very easy transition. But then afterwards, there were a few things, a few restrictions. I had curfews at a certain time. And us being teenagers at that time, you know, you got your, what you call, hormones going, so at all the parties, and, you know, to get around the curfew to get somewhere. And I remember I got arrested one time because we were at a party, and one of the girls that was very popular did not show up. And I knew her personally, so they says, well, why don't you go see what, you know, what happened? Because she was working in a cafe as a waitress. And, it was, you know, she said she was going to come after work. She didn't come.